A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on January 21, 1996, in the series Look Again, entitled A Question Full of Anguish. The scripture readings for the sermon are Malachi 3, verses 1 through 4, and Matthew 11, verses 1 through 19. The text for the sermon is Matthew 11, verse 3. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Epiphany 96 is a time to reflect and consider the possibility of an alternative way of seeing everything. For Epiphany means manifestation. And there are those marvelous moments when truth dawns upon one, when light dawns. And we have an opportunity to reevaluate, to revisit old tradition, and to see everything in a new light. I was reading in the newspaper this week about the American Astronomical Society. They've discovered a couple of new planets. And they apparently have a couple of sun-like stars out there with planets orbiting around them. And it said in the article, and the scientists are growing in their belief that this solar system of ours is far from unique. And I smiled to myself and said, there goes another one. Ah, it's so much bigger and so much more wonderful than ever we've yet dreamed of, if only we have the courage to open our eyes. If only, as Jesus said, we have ears to hear. But it's not easy. In fact, it's threatening. It can be a scary business to keep on living and keep on growing, to continue to open oneself to new insight, to a grander vision of the truth. Just ask John the Baptist. For he had the courage to raise a question full of anguish. When he sent his followers to Jesus while he was in prison, absorbed with a question, what's going on? He sent his followers to Jesus and he said, are you the one, or should we look for another? It was a question that took courage to raise, a question that took courage to acknowledge, a question that took courage to put to Jesus. But John did it, because as he sat in prison thinking, hearing trickles of information coming in about the ministry of Jesus, he knew that he was being faced with a choice. You see, all of the gospel writers tell us that Jesus came to John and was baptized by John. But it's only in the fourth gospel that we read that Jesus began his ministry in the area where John was baptizing. Only in the fourth gospel do we learn about an early ministry of Jesus in that area. And it would seem reasonable that Jesus, having followed the swarms out of Jerusalem to hear this preacher of righteousness, this fiery preacher of judgment, that Jesus began his own ministry in the mode and on the model of John. And John was painting from the palette of Malachi. You see, John was one of those people that was sick of the world. He was sick and tired of everything he saw going on around him. He was sick of the corruption. He was sick of the decay, the decadence of his society. He was sick of the Roman occupiers. John was one of those longing for God to do something, to ring down the curtain of history, to blow the trumpet, to turn on the lights, to damn the wicked and vindicate the righteous. John was a good man, but he was sick of the world. And he found his voice in Malachi, who spoke about the Lord sending his messenger to the temple and to bring down the judgment of heaven on the darkness of earth. And John thought he found the one. He had an epiphany experience. He baptized Jesus. He had a sense that the Spirit of God was on this one. He heard the voice. He pointed to Jesus. And I suspect, even though John doesn't tell us specifically, that in the ministry that Jesus took up in the area of the Jordan where John was baptizing, it was a ministry very much in the spirit of John. Because it's also in the fourth gospel that you have the cleansing of the temple. If you go to the other gospels, the cleansing of the temple is in Holy Week. But in the fourth gospel, it's very early in the ministry of Jesus. You remember the story. Jesus goes in the temple and he takes the cords off the wall and he starts flailing away with a violent reaction at what he saw. "You've made this house of prayer a den of thieves." And he overturned the tables of the merchants and made quite a scene. And I can imagine that John was out by the Jordan saying, "Yes, yes, now it begins. Go get him, Jesus." And John tells us that there was a little competition developing. Jesus apparently was very successful, and John said, "That's okay. I must decrease. He must increase." Because you see, according to John's understanding, according to John's knowledge of the calendar of God, everything was on schedule. And John could even go to his arrest and go to prison, satisfied that it won't be long now. Something must have happened, because from prison he sends his followers to Jesus and says, "Are you the one? Or did I get it wrong? What could have happened?" Well, if we piece the pieces together from the other gospel writers, we learn, for example, in Luke's chronology, Jesus is baptized. And the Spirit drives him out into the wilderness, and he struggles in the wilderness with those temptation narratives, struggling to find out who he was and what God was calling him to be, struggling to find his own vision, his own voice. And Luke tells us he came up out of the wilderness and went to his hometown in Galilee, not down there where John was any longer, but, as John tells us in his gospel, through Samaria to Galilee. Remember what he did when he got there? Did some healings around Capernaum and then went to his home synagogue and stood up to read the scripture. "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. He has anointed me to preach good news, to give sight to the blind, release to the prisoners, causing the lame to walk, to announce the favorable year of the Lord." Well, the hometown crowd stood up and cheered, right? Wrong. They hated it because they picked up in Jesus something different. There was a grace about him. There was a breadth of vision about him. There was a sense of the embrace of God that was broader than anything they'd ever dreamed of, and they weren't happy about it. In fact, they were so angry they were ready to kill him. But Jesus went on, and he healed, and he taught. And the common people heard him gladly. He spoke to all sorts and conditions of humankind, sat at table with whomever. and embodied that nearness of God drawing near in grace. And the word got back to John. And John said, that's not in the program. That's not exactly the agenda I had set for Jesus. I thought by now the heavens would have opened and the wrath of God poured out. And all I hear about are blind people seeing and deaf people hearing and people dancing, singing, celebrating the grace of God. And finally, he couldn't stand it anymore. And he sent the followers with this question full of anguish. Are you the one? Or do I have to look for another? And the translation of that question could be as well, or must I look for another kind of Messiah? In other words, the question that John put to Jesus was, did I miss it? Did I get it wrong? Can you imagine the anguish? John was a good man. John was serious. John was passionate. And John's whole life and ministry was at stake. And the answer to that question? John came to the end of his days entertaining the possibility that he might have gotten it wrong. Jesus is never defensive. Do you ever notice that in the Gospels? Jesus never defensive. He didn't answer directly, only indirectly. He said to the followers of John, look around, see what's happening? See the good things that are happening? Go tell John what you're experiencing here. But of course, behind that indirect answer was the obvious, direct answer. John, I'm not the one you hoped I would be. John, I can't paint from Malachi's palette. For in my own struggle to find my own vision and to gain my own voice, I heard another song. I heard the song of the suffering servant. I heard Isaiah's record of that one who spoke of one who would not crush the broken reed or snuff out the smoldering wick. John, I can't do it your way. I have to do it according to the vision that compels me. I've got to proclaim a grace that is grander than anything you ever dreamed of. I understand, John, you've run out of patience, but the God who has gripped me never runs out of patience. I understand, John, your dis-ease with all that you see about us. But I drink at the fountain of a God who will never abandon us, who will stay by creation and walk with us and never let us go. Jesus affirmed John. He didn't make a big point of saying John was wrong. In fact, it would seem that Jesus was ready to acknowledge that John had fulfilled the role that he had to fulfill. John was a prophet, the greatest of the prophets, Jesus is willing to admit. But he said something new has emerged. John was a border character. John did his thing honestly, passionately, but something new has happened. And I have to be true to the vision that has dawned upon me. And so they went back to John, and how did he receive the news? Well, we really don't know. We really don't know. This we know, when he received the news, he was faced with a choice. He was faced with the choice of shutting down or opening up. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, they weren't just writing interesting biographies of Jesus. They put those Gospels together with real theological intention. Each of them is different. Each of them coming out of a different context and addressed to a different context. We're talking now about six decades down the line from the events of Jesus. Matthew, probably in the area of Antioch, the Greek city with all of its Hellenistic influences, probably a Jewish Christian community. 6 decades down the line, do you think maybe Matthew put the story in there because he was well aware that within that community there were those who were saying, was he the one? Was he really the one? We know that question was asked. Even in one of Peter's letters, the words are recorded by the mockers who say, where's the day of his appearing? In other words, it seems like it's business as usual. What's this big eruption into human history? Was he really the one? Well, don't you ever wonder? Haven't you ever contemplated the question? I mean, what about all of this? Is there really anything to it? Don't you ever wonder? Maybe Matthew was saying to those in that Christian community to whom he was writing, you have your doubts? You're in good company. None less than John the Baptist raised a question full of anguish. How did John receive the news? We don't know. This we know. He was faced with a choice. We're always faced with a choice. Every time something new dawns upon us, every time some new information comes our way, every time we enter into another depth and level of human experience, every time we are faced with that anguishing question that rises within us, if we will not deny it, if we will not repress it, if we will let it come, if we'll look at it, if we'll acknowledge it, if we'll honor it, we'll always be faced with a choice. Shut down or to open up. And when we're talking about religious values, moral values, the frame of reference in which we've come to know who we are and whose we are and where we're going, whenever we deal with those issues, we are dealing with the very core of our being. and to have those structures, those tried and tested truths, shaken, questioned, undercut, can send us into a tailspin of anguish. Disappointment, anxiety, and then it's D-Day. Then I'll either shut down, flee into the citadel of old tested truths, build the walls high, block myself off from any new information, deny the fact that my human experience no longer connects with my faith structure, and with white-knuckled intensity try to get through the storm. Or I'll say, open my eyes, that I may see glimpses of truth I've not yet dreamed of. Dear God, it's painful to be human. What a struggle it is. Never arriving. Always on journey, pilgrimage, around every curve of the road, new vistas. Painful it can be, raising questions full of anguish. And always putting us to a choice. Shut down. Tighten up. Or open up. And let the light show to us something greater than ever we dreamed of. The New Testament paraphraser J.B. Phillips years and years ago wrote a little book whose title says it all. Your God is too small. Ah, dear friends, religion, religion is a powerful, powerful force in our lives. And it can damn us. Or it can give us new birth. And maybe this is the way we can tell about our own responding. Let me ask you in Epiphany 1996, is the picture growing brighter? Is the horizon broadening? Is the glory dawning brighter and brighter and brighter? Is the vision grander? Are you becoming more comfortable in your skin? More at peace with being human? Growing in trust and in confidence and in the kind of serenity that is able to greet every new day, confident that with every new dawn, the mercy of God will be new? Or, be honest with me now. Is there a knot in your stomach? Are you tightening down? Have you got a clenched fist? And is your spirit growing smaller and meaner? Epiphany 96. Another one of those times to decide. To move into the shriveled stoniness of death, or the growing wonder of life. I dare you.